boys. How the devil are you? Welcome to the latest instalment of Where's Jeff? And what have you guys been up to this last week?
We found Jeff!
What have you been up to this boring non-Premier League weekend of football?
Well, I started off the walk Tuesday. Where's Jeff turned up with quite a few guests. I think there was roughly about 90 people on the walk from the beautiful spot of Harrogate all the way to Leeds United. And it was a very enjoyable, very tiring day, 26, just over 26 mile. But it was great to see Jeff and some of the people who were out. Some of the stories are just absolutely amazing. And I believe you were watching or turning up next day, Tomo.
Yeah, I did the Merseyside one. We started off at Tranmere Rovers ground, and we did the ferry across the Mersey, Charlie, which you did a few years ago. So I didn't do the whole hog because I obviously have a brand new knee. I didn't want to risk it, but it was great because Jeff was in absolutely fine fettle. He was good, and he'd already done 2 days prior to that. So it was great to catch up. We had two nice evenings together as well. We dined out on the Wednesday night, and you wouldn't think that he'd done 3 marathons in 3 days. I just think it is absolutely extraordinary. But it was lovely chatting, catching up. He was absolutely, but you bang on, Charlie. Some of those stories from some, because a lot of the people who do the walks have all been diagnosed with prostate cancer. And some of them, there's a guy, Kevin, and he's just absolutely inspirational. It was, some of the things that he's done is just marvellous.
He's a machine, is Kevin, isn't he? And he's the one that's got a book out on this week as well.
Do you know the title of it?
Oh, yeah, it was a funny one, wasn't it?
It was Dead Man Running.
Dead Man Walking. Oh, Dead Man Running, that was it, yes.
Because he does the deserts, he does
himself,
the sand dunes, he does everything, this guy. He's truly amazing.
It was like the North Pole or something, wasn't it? And he had like sort of pulling this sledge across the snow, but it was like a competition. A lot of guys were doing it, obviously all charitable. But some of the pictures of the Northern Lights and all that. And then he shows me another picture, and you're right, Charlie, it's like sort of 50 degrees in the Sahara or something.
Sahara.
But he's been diagnosed with terminal cancer, and you're just, wow, what an inspiration. He's truly amazing. And there was other guys as well, which it was marvellous, absolutely marvellous.
Yeah, I have to say it was quite inspirational, the walk. I think I quite a lucky one because I walked through London. And apart from having to walk up to Alexandra Palace at about mile 23, we had a very nice flat walk around London. It was very pleasant. The temperature was just about right. And we had a lovely day. But there was about 250 people that joined up for the walk around London. It was really quite a sight to see all the guys. I mean, I was at the back, obviously. Couldn't keep up with the pace.
But to, it's like to look ahead and just see...
It's exactly what it was like. But to look ahead from the back and just have a look at the whole trail of people that were walking down the embankment down the one side of the River Thames, it was just absolutely stunning. And no, fair play to Jeff. He's done another cracking job for prostate cancer. I can't believe it's not Sir Jeff just yet. It's quite remarkable.
Well, to be honest, Tiz, there was some people who were actually on our walk and they were asking the question why he's not been honoured in some way. And I would like to think if there's been some people who've got great honours, not done anywhere near of what Jeff Stelling has done, certainly for prostate cancer. Just the awareness, besides the money what the guy's raised, is truly amazing.
Yeah. It's quite an inspiration.
Not
because we touched on the people that are involved in the walk, like Kevin and others, you know. But I think it's the actual respect that Jeff seems to get from the people that turn up. Because when you turn up at like 7 in the morning to start the walk, no one's really ready to have a conversation. But within an hour into the walk, all of a sudden they're kind of queuing up to have a little chat with him. So I think he's a bang on, guys. I think there has to be something coming his way. He certainly earned it, not just financially.
Boys, Charlie, if he got a night out, he'd be unbearable. Unbearable, just think of it. Oh my, you know he likes his solitude. Oh my goodness. Knighthood. Oh, couldn't bear the thought of it.
He could take it to the Algarve with him.
I'll tell you what he does need. I'll tell you what he does need to do, though. I mean, I don't know if you boys were there for the morning briefing when everyone sat in the stand at the football stadium.
Yeah.
And he has a little chat with everyone. He is still doing the same gags as he was doing 5 years ago when he first started these walks, honestly. The gag about him being 6'1" when he started these walks is just wearing a bit thin on me now. I struggle to laugh at it, to be honest.
It's only agreement. You know, when he starts it, you go, don't go there, Jeff.
Don't go there again, Jeff. No, surely not.
The people are that
he can't help it. He's happy when he cuts the ribbon, isn't he?
What a man. He certainly is. But no, brilliant effort, Mr. Stelling. Absolutely superb. I've had a busy week, boys. So after we spoke last time, I think, when did we speak? It was on the Monday, wasn't it? So since then, you'll be impressed, Tomo.
Come on.
I played five-a-side football on the Tuesday night. I played golf on the Friday afternoon. I played football Friday night in an ex-Saints game, which we won 4-3, by the way. I was the manager. Played myself for the first 25 minutes, scored a header and a penalty, then walked
off.
Not
a header.
Enough done. I know. It was the first header I'd scored since 1998. Honestly, it was magnificent. And then I only played 25 minutes because, obviously, I had to do the marathon the next day with Jeff, so I had to take it easy.
Good
because
excuse.
I'm not as fit as I used to be. Yeah, absolutely. But I had some wonderful news in the family as well this week. Is my daughter, who lives up in Harrogate, funny enough, Tomo, where Charlie was walking from, and she gave birth to twins on Friday
wonderful.
Morning.
Oh, brilliant. So, double celebration.
Yeah, so it's the first set of twins. Yeah, the first set of twins in our family. So that was quite something. So that was lovely news. And my mum and dad, I've got my mum and dad staying here, actually. So they bought their car over from Guernsey. They're staying here. So they're going to drive up next week and go and have a little look at their little great-granddaughters.
Wow. Absolute wonderful.
Nah.
Tis, congratulations.
Absolutely.
Well, Tis, quickly, because I know we'll have to move on. You're saying playing football. I played golf. You're obviously your favourite. I played golf. Roy Evans Foundation. Absolutely the best round of golf I have ever had last Thursday. And we scored 76 points. Yours truly scored 39 points.
No way. Off of what handicap?
Absolutely. Well, it's... Listen, I was off 21, and you know I'm not a good player. I play cack-handed, but I just have to tell you, I got nearest the pin on the par 3 7th, which was absolutely amazing.
No way.
I was absolutely delighted. Tis, it was...
Hang on, didn't you also have a hole-in-one recently? Was it last year or the year before?
Yeah, it was at Royal West Derby in Liverpool.
For someone who don't play very often, you've done all right, haven't you?
I've done not bad, but I told my guys... from O2, just give them a little plug, that if I do have a good day, I will score, and I certainly scored, because the other guy who was off 21 was shocking. Julian, you were shocking.
Well,
move on now.
Yeah, no, Tiz and I are playing Loch Lomond, the wonderful Loch Lomond this week, so really looking forward to that. I think it's going to be an absolutely stunner of a day.
Sorry.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Tis, apparently my invite was lost in the post.
No, it wasn't. You just weren't invited.
That's shocking, Chaz. Charlie, I can't believe your mate didn't invite Tomo. That's shocking.
No, there's more famous ex-Liverpool players coming up than Tomo.
Squirrels and nuts come to mind.
Excellent stuff. Well, I'm pleased you've all had it. Oh, I'll tell you what else. Quick plug as well. For the I took my mum and dad to the musical in the theatre in Southampton, 9 to 5.
That's
absolutely magnificent.
That's a long day, that is, in the theatre.
It was a long evening, yeah.
Yeah, was sure.
That was quite funny for you, Tom. But gotta love a bit of Dolly Parton. So took my mum and dad to that. If you get a chance to go and watch it, it's brilliant. Very funny.
Good stuff.
So I suppose we better start talking about football, really, given that's kind of what we're here for. So we are looking at this weekend's fixtures, which kick off Saturday lunchtime with Crystal Palace taking on Spurs. Charlie, what have you made of Palace's start to the season? Did you see there's been a bit of a struggle for them this year?
I did initially, to be fair. I thought in the second half against West Ham they were excellent. It was as if Vieira had just taken the instruction book, stuck it in the drawer and just said, right, OK, let's see what you've got. I mean, Gallagher's been mentioned with a nice goal. We know Zaha is unpredictable. Don't quite always know what you're going to get up front. I don't know. I think it will take Vieira a bit of time to stamp what I would think is his personality on the team rather than, you know, you look back and what Roy did in the previous years with his Palace side. It was always well-drilled, well-organised. Zaha maybe to the rescue. Benteke very rarely turned up, although he always seemed to turn up when a contract got waved in front of him. And I think just with the people that maybe they let go a little bit, the experience of Cahill and Townsend, I suppose, that they've just had to kind of rejig a little bit. But I generally do think that Palace, under Vieira, might just start to, you know, take a few things in. And I think he won't be as disciplined or as well-drilled as Roy, but I think that might aid them. So I think this is a fair chance. I know Spurs have had an excellent start, but I think this is a real tough game to call. I see Spurs edging it, but I think Palace will give them a real game.
Did Edouard, did that happen, didn't it, Charlie?
It did.
Edouard to Palace, which was... How good is he, Charlie? Because I ask you these questions. I asked about Van Dijk when he was there before he went to Tizzy's Southampton. And you said, Tomo, he's cruise control. He's fantastic. He can hack it in the Premier League. And you said it was too easy in the Scottish League. Edouard, is he that good? Is he will do the business down here?
He's got really nice talent, Tomo. But I think he was the type of player when I looked at him. He's very natural on the eye. He glides by people. He's quite moody. The last season, he scored quite a lot of goals, which, you know, if you play at Celtic, you should be anyway. But it wasn't a particularly strong performance from him. He looked quite moody, as if he was probably there a year too long. He didn't get the money that they were talking about for him. But I think the difficult thing for me for Edouard is that Celtic would get 75%+ of the domination of the ball and all the service he gets in the big games, whereas he goes to Palace and he's going to have to live off little bits and pieces, so that'll be a bit of adjustment and take him a bit of time. But he's a nice footballer, but he does like the ball at his feet. He's not overly keen and getting on the shoulder of people, so it'll take him a bit of time to settle in, but a nice footballer, nice in the eye.
So, Charlie, I had a good chat with Mark Bright when we were on the walk. Brighty joined the walk on Saturday, and he said something interesting to me. He said, Vieira in pre-season played 4-3-3. He wanted to change the formation that they played. He played 4-3-3 all through pre-season, and it went quite well. And it came to the first game of the season, and the day before they played Chelsea, he decided to go 4-4-2 after playing 4-3-3 all through pre-season, which was a bit odd. Obviously, they got... well and truly beaten by Chelsea. But he went back to 4-3-3 for the next two games, and they haven't been beaten. Where in that formation do you think Odson Edouard would play?
Yeah, he's just in that formation, Tiz. He played it under Brendan Rodgers when he brought him to Celtic from PSG. He sometimes has played with a partner, but it doesn't really affect him greatly. He does like to link up play. The problem I would say for Palace, if Palace play the 4-3-3 and they keep two guys wide, they'll need a strong midfield runner to come and link with him. He needs that option to create a little bit of space for him. No, he's fairly comfortable in a 4-4-2 or a 4-3-3, but this is, it'll all be about, Tiz, as you and I well know, it's all about the service into you. If you make yourself available and you can get that early pass into you, then you'll be fine. But you'll need, if the guys stay wide, you'll need strong midfield support, and Palace don't tend to do that too often.
Well, Conor Gallagher, isn't it? That's what they'll be looking for. And he said after the game, didn't he, against West Ham, that's what he likes to do, is try to get beyond it. But where does that then leave Benteke? Where does it leave Jordan Ayew? Which Jordan Ayew's been pushed out to one side. I think his days are numbered, because I can't see Palace playing two strikers. I can't for the life of me. I don't think they're good enough to do that. I think Edouard, as you're just saying, is probably down the middle, and he'll have to have then the Conor Gallagher and others trying to get past him, because they just don't score enough goals.
So, Tomo, obviously you think that Spurs are going to win this game fairly comfortably, because you've gone for them.
Yep.
For our ACCA this week. Yep. At odds of about 4-5. What do you think? Another 1-0 win for the Spurs? Are they in danger of becoming boring Tom?
Well, I tell you what, isn't it amazing though? Charlie will get this, because it doesn't matter how you're playing. A lot of people, we want Spurs to play the Spurs way. And it doesn't matter, even if we lose 4-3, we're playing this. No, it's not. They've had three games, won them all 1-0, and the fans are absolutely delighted. Absolutely delighted. What is wrong with that? You've kept clean sheets, the defence is well organised. Nuno Espirito Santo's got them organised. I don't think there's anything up with that. And if they go on for more, I can see them probably winning this by more. I really do. I fancy them for a... But I expect them to keep another clean sheet. I really do, against Palace. I can probably see them scoring at least two goals in the game. I just think Spurs are that confident side. Once they get a few wins, they can go on and they can obviously go for about half a dozen games unbeaten, but then they can fall off very, very quickly. And that has been the problem with Spursy, as they call it, and I would expect that somewhere in the near future.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because if you looked at the personnel of Spurs back four this season, before the season had started, and somebody said to you, there'll be three games in and they won't concede a goal, I'm not sure a lot of people would have looked at that and gone, yeah, I can see that happening. It doesn't look on paper the strongest back four in the world, Chaz, does it?
No, it doesn't. I know Romero came in from the Argentinian, although I think he's going to have an issue. A couple of players going to have an issue coming back from so-called Brazil-Argentina game that never took place. And now I'm reading today that the Spurs guys...
I mean, that was remarkable, wasn't it?
It was quite extraordinary. I think after Argentina put them to shame in the Copa de America, that it was probably a panic move from Brazil's authorities, because their team was weak and they were scared of another embarrassment. But these players sound as if they're having to go to Croatia to quarantine to try and miss just the one game here. So, you know, it might be a little bit difficult for Spurs, but it doesn't look the strongest defensively. And I'm always thinking that Lloris is always, he's always a mistake in him somewhere along the line, but are they going to be forceful enough?
I just think Spurs with Nuno, as we've seen him in his heyday, with the three at the back at Wolves, it was very structured and he likes to stick to it. When he was bullish about it, his side were, they all knew what they were doing. And I think these early days at Spurs and trying to impress on the side, position, 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 they're getting away with it. And they have players to sort of, to break and to create. And I think that's what you're seeing. So the early results are helping everybody throughout the team. And with Harry Kane, once, I still don't think he's fully fit, although he starts to score the goals now. I think they'll be better off for it, but you do know that they are Spurs and they will have that collapse sooner rather than later. You'll be happy with that, Charlie.
So the first of the 3 o'clock kickoffs, boys, we've got the Charlie Rant, Arsenal against Norwich. Charlie, can you see Norwich getting something out of this game?
No, this is my choice in the Acker. I'm actually going Arsenal -1 after the rants that I've had.
Wow!
Yeah, I know.
Arsenal to score two goals.
Well, have you seen the goals we scored against West Brom? They were pretty tasteful. Norwich and Arsenal, bottom versus second bottom. I would anticipate that Arteta has spent a considerable amount of money, biggest spenders over the window, wasn't totally enamoured by some of the signings that they did make. Tom Issue, I think I have to wait and see, but at least it's a defender in. I would have to generally think, guys, that there has to be an element of anger within Arsenal at the moment. Not just coming from the stands, but within the dressing room, that they have to start standing up to this and saying, it's been an embarrassment, we need to sort it out. This is the opportunity for we get ourselves. And no disrespect to Norwich. Their attack-minded side, they let in goals. And I know Arsenal have been letting them in too. But I would expect Arsenal to really roll Norwich over here. If they don't, then I generally don't know what the outcome will be for Arteta with the fans in particular. They'll explode. They will explode if they don't get a performance,
Charlie,
out of this lot.
Can I just ask you, Charlie, what if Arsenal don't beat Norwich?
I've been at a couple of Arsenal.
I don't know whether you heard it over the weekend. Charlie, the chat was Sam Allardyce for Arsenal.
No,
what are you talking about?
Honestly.
Seriously?
Honestly. Seriously. I mean, I know we're bad, but come on. It's
was that the chat in the Thompson household?
No, the chat was on TalkSport, to be honest.
Well, to be honest, I don't know who was bringing that in, but obviously.
Not serious, Charlie. I'm asking the question.
Well, the last couple of weeks,
when I heard them discussing it.
It's just the last couple of weeks I've been speaking, a couple of nights I've been with Arsenal fans, and they're obviously pretty angry and pretty upset, pretty despondent about the ownership and the way that Edu's wheeling and dealing, but the frustration will come and is coming Arteta's way, because the choices he made at Man City were pretty awful. Kolasinac, Chambers, just how he finds that he thinks this is a structure with these players who he wanted out the door just only a month before that. And the ones he's holding on to also are pretty worrying. But like everything, guys, there has to become a time that the players have got to respond. So if he doesn't win it, Tomo,
absolutely,
then he can expect the full force of Arsenal fans to want him out. The full force, if he doesn't beat Norwich.
I've got a question for you, Chaz. How bad must things be in the Arsenal changing room that one of their players would walk out of the club and give up £20 million in wages, just terminate his contract and walk off? I'm talking about Willian, obviously.
Well, I'll be interested to see if there's further details on this, but I think in general aspects of how he's done that and what's developed through it, as we know, there's a lot of stuff goes through the books now as undisclosed and agreements in place. I can't for the life of me think that he's walked away and just ripped it up and put it in a shredder with no gain whatsoever. I just don't see how that's materialised. There's been
absolutely
some sort of agreement reached.
I don't see that.
And for that sake, all I can say is that Willian was fabulous at Chelsea, but he was an absolute disaster at the Arsenal. Disaster.
Well, I can tell you from a contact inside the Arsenal camp is that at Arsenal, the problem isn't with the manager. The problem is all in the changing room, from what I'm hearing. And there is a lot of disharmony in the changing room. And that is something that obviously is very difficult for a manager. And even though it might be the player's fault, we know what happens when things go wrong.
Well,
it's the manager who carries the can.
I've told you for the last 2 weeks you could see that coming. You could see it. And I'm up here. You've heard that. I could see that in players' body language.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, so I think you're right, Tom. I think it was a good question, because I think if they don't beat this Norwich team and beat them fairly comfortably, I think there will be some serious heat coming on Mikel Arteta. But I think that's a good place for now to take a little break. And we will be back previewing the rest of the fixtures in the second half of Where's Jeff? And welcome back to part two of Where's Jeff? And we're going to start the second half with our next game and the last leg of our ACCA this week. And it is the Watford against Wolves game. And it's my choice, and I have gone for Wolverhampton Wanderers to get off the mark for the season and take all 3 points at Watford. So that's our third choice. So we've gone with Spurs, We've gone with Arsenal minus one. and we've gone with Wolves, who are around about 6-5 to beat them. And I think if you had a little £10 bet on that little accumulator, it would pay you back somewhere in the region of £94. Not bad value. Charlie, Tomo, what do you think? My choice of Wolves a decent one?
I think your judgment's being clouded by the game against Manchester United. Tis, and I know that the three games they've played have only been beat 1-0. They were excellent, by the way. Absolutely outstanding. How are they going to score goals, even against the Watford side? I think Watford have been all right, sitting there 12th in the league. Be more than pleased with that. But no, I just can't see them winning, Tiz. They might get a point out of it, but I just don't see them sort of, even this game, outscoring a Watford side, who, as we know, like to wish Troy Deeney all the best, by the way. He did one of our shows, if you remember, and really nice guy, and done his bit at Watford. But I think they might miss him, by the way, just as that influence in the game, because whenever Liverpool played him, you probably the same, Tiz, and Charlie, with your teams. You hated seeing Deeney on the pitch, no matter what, because he was an absolute, he was a rallying call to all his players. So good luck to him at Birmingham.
Can I just say, I think there was a slight understatement there, Tomo, when you said he's done his bit. I mean, I think he's done about 11 years at Watford, hasn't he? Made himself an absolute legend there. And I think I heard him say in an interview, he doesn't think his time at Watford is done. That doesn't necessarily mean in the playing aspect. But it sounds like he's got ambitions to go back there on the coaching side, which is great to hear.
No, nice that he's still got that will to play.
Yeah, and he's been a big influence there for such a long time. And he's also a guy that has got a very strong opinion about certain ways of doing things. He was never slow in slagging a few other clubs off. I remember him having a real pop at Arsenal and thought they were soft and that's fine. You always welcome people's opinions who are even if they're still playing. I have to say, I'm like Tomo on this one. Tiz, I think you're a bit clouded. I don't know if you're trying to make up for that last bad choice you had 2 weeks ago. But Watford are pretty strong and physical at home.
I was at your draw.
And Wolves, third bottom of the table. You're having a pop at me about the Gunners. Third bottom of the table, no goals. I mean, come on. Are you taking this hack is seriously or what?
Well, I'm going on the premise that they can't go the whole season not scoring a goal. They have to score at some point. And I think against a Watford team is probably going to be their best chance against a team who haven't kept a clean sheet this season. So just bear with me. I only had a draw last week. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't like my team got smashed. Do you know what I mean? In fact, none of us have had a defeat in our picks so far in the Accers. We've had a couple of draws and four wins. So we've not done too bad. So bear with me. But there was one player, Tom at Watford, that I wanted to ask you about because it's been interesting the way his career has progressed since he's left Bournemouth, where I thought he did a cracking job. Josh King. What do you think he can offer Watford this season? I've been surprised that Everton didn't use him a little bit more, given how good he was at Bournemouth.
Going back about 5 years, when they were having good spells, I thought at times he was unplayable. And we often on Soccer Saturday talking about this guy, I thought he had big things ahead of him. And he could either play as a number 9, he was good because he could play as a number 10, and he could drop in there. He's like 6'2", he's got great ability, left foot, right foot, good in the air, and I thought, and wasn't it one time that he was on the fringe of joining Manchester United again? And I was like, I thought, I could probably see that. And then everything seemed to fall apart. He ended up joining Everton on loan, and I thought, it's not a bad signing that. I think he can do a job for them. And it's never materialised. Whether he's got too comfortable, I've been really disappointed about where his career is ending up, if you want. And hopefully he can sort of reinvent himself at Watford, and he needs to do it because he does possess ability.
Yeah, he certainly does. Well, good luck to the lad. I hope it hope his career kicks off again for him. So now to the, for me, the fixture of the weekend. And no, Tomo, it's not Leeds against Liverpool. But on Saturday at 3 o'clock is Leicester against Manchester City. I think this has got the makings of an absolute cracker of a game. Charlie, how do you see this one going?
Well, after watching the last two that these two have played in, and Leicester were in both, you get to the stage that still Man City never found a number nine. We know they all went in for Kane, and we made ourselves some suggestions of a nine that they could get. They toyed with a Ronaldo situation. So I think what that tells certainly me is he was concerned about the number nine position. He had an issue with it, and he's not fixed it. The thing is with Leicester, like a few other teams now when they play City, Manchester City, if you don't score that first goal when you're dominating probably in the first 15, 20, take it to 25 minutes. If you're still level, or maybe sneak a goal against them, then you're in a very strong position that, you know, you don't park the bus, but you still have an influence that can be organised and drilled. And then you go for the counter-attack with people like Vardy, who's already got two this season. Madison, Iheanacho's done well for them also. And you just look at the capabilities that Leicester have got. We did say a couple of weeks ago, we know they got a bit of a hard time against West Ham, but they did what they normally do under Brendan Rodgers. Bounced back really, really well, really strongly. I find this one hard to separate. It should be a Man City win. I think Leicester will get something again. I'm actually going to go a 2-2 draw here.
Oh, Desmond.
Well, Charlie, I tell you what, I don't know what you've been drinking, Charlie, but have you seen Leicester defending? The best player last season was a guy called Suwonchu, who was absolutely, and I think they've got a Marty playing at the back. Oh my goodness. I'll tell you, if they can keep out Man City, I'll be absolutely amazed. Because defensively, they've been shocking. And I know they got away with it against Norwich, but I can't see them keeping Manchester City quiet. I don't see where they're getting draw from. And
did
I
you
know
watch
Leicester
the,
is sitting ninth.
The cup game at the start of the season?
I thought it was all right. But Charlie, things have changed since then. They can't keep everybody. A lot of the injuries are in defence. And Soyuncu, who is that one who's kept them all together for so long. Johnny Evans has not played yet. Fofana's been injured. And I'm just looking at it and I've gone, Soyuncu, who you'd be saying, come on, you've got to step up now. Did you see him against Norwich?
Yeah, he was poor. I'll give you that.
Absolutely shocking.
No, he absolutely was. But you're right, they've had some problems with injuries to the back line. I mean, the two lads that they got from Southampton, I think, are both injured at the moment, Bertrand and Vestergaard, as well as Fofana, who obviously had a cracking season last season and picked up that bad leg break. So, yeah, I think it's going to be tough. I agree with Tomo, to be honest, Chaz. I can't see Leicester. I can't see them taking anything from this game. I think Man City will be too strong. 2-5-0 wins on the bounce.
It's going to be
City.
A cracking watch. I know that.
It's pretty awesome.
It is. All the years we worked at Sky, I don't think you've ever said I agree with Tomo so much than you've said in today's podcast.
I don't know what's going on, Tomo. It must be the 26 degrees down here on the south coast has got to my. It's gone to my head.
It's snowing in Glasgow.
Nice, no, it's not.
Better not be at Loch Lomond. That's all.
No,
right
it's going to be beautiful.
Right, move on, Tez.
Okay, Tomo, we'll give Tomo a cheery up now because we are going to move on to the Super Sunday game this week. Only one game on the Sunday this week,
and strangely,
that is the Leeds versus Liverpool game. Tomo, do you see Leeds causing any problems for your boys?
Yes, I do, Tez. I always think Leeds against the big teams, they have a go. And we've seen them against Manchester United. They've been done twice against Manchester United at Old Trafford in the last couple of years. But they still have a go. They still come out fighting. But Elland Road is going to be packed. This was one of the great fixtures going back and always has been. Like the Man United-Leeds game, this place is going to be bouncing. And we've got it. We have to be ready. Oh, it's one of those fixtures that I have looked at. Elland Road was always my favourite other ground. So My boys going there to Leeds, I think, has got the making of... I know, and I totally agree, Leicester and Man City is probably the game of the weekend. But, boys, I think this Leeds team will come out all guns blazing. They will. Rafinha, I think, is a star. I was quite surprised he actually stayed there in the transfer window. But I do still think the way we've started off, I do still expect us to win this, but only just.
Yeah, I think we're getting another experience of end-to-end football with Van Dijk back and the defenders back at Liverpool. You know, our Rafinha, James, is he going to make his Leeds debut? We're at £25 million purchase. So he's been desperate to get wider players in, isn't he, Bielsa? Seems to be that he wanted wider players. Ryan Kent from Rangers was another that was tipped to maybe go and play there. But they went for the more expensive one from Manchester United. So that'll be an interesting theory, whether they think, well, can we go and have a go at Liverpool's full-backs? Or are we going to try and block the Liverpool full-backs getting forward? Because if you do that, then you have a real problem trying to get Bamford. And I know he didn't play brilliantly in his international appearance during the week. But he's always a handful, isn't he? But end-to-end game. But yes, I see Liverpool winning us.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on there, Charlie. I do think that I watched Leeds against Burnley and they were not at the races at all. They will probably lift their game for Liverpool.
Absolutely, that's what
I do think at. Liverpool will still. I still think Liverpool will have just enough to see them off. So moving on to the other massive game of the weekend, Southampton against West Ham. what are you laughing at?
Go on.
Now, I have to say, from my point of view, Southampton have probably got 2 points more than I might have been expecting at this stage of the season, so I'm quite happy with where we sit at the moment. But Charlie, West Ham and Moisey, great season last year, and very good start to this season. Were you a little bit surprised, though, that they didn't see off Crystal Palace?
I was more than surprised. I thought of one thing about David Moyes. He would have been saying to them, you know, be aware of this. Get yourself sorted. I think they just had a bit of slackness and it's not really been evident in West Ham for a good period of time. And I thought the disappointing thing again was that it's taken David Moyes and this West Ham team a long time to get the fans behind them. And as we had with our special guest last week, Tony Cotty, saying, oh no, they're right behind them all right. And then they go and disappoint a little bit. But, you know, it leads me into Antonio, 4 goals so far. I was looking at prices for top goal scorer and he's well out. I think he's about 16, 18 to 1 still. And I know I'm not overly surprised that his prices dramatically went out, but people like Lukaku who scored 1 goal and he's suddenly 10-3 favourite. So Ronaldo, another one who's came right in as one of the favourites. So this will be a game that I think Southampton will tend to be a bit clever and play it more like an away game and let Antonio see what he does and then try and counter-attack. I think Southampton are pretty good at this type of thing. So again, I'm finding it hard to separate them, but they have to contain Antonio. He's the key.
Yeah, I think you're looking good, Tiz. I'm not seeing you getting beat, put it that way. But I think Saints have got to be, considering where they are, obviously they're... They're not looking overly offensive at the moment. I just think with this West Ham side, if you're going to go all out, they can hit you. And a team like you've got at the moment is slightly vulnerable. If West Ham get that into them where they're going to counter-attack you, I think they can damage you. And I'm with Charlie on this. I'm looking at this. I think this has got a draw written all over it.
Well, I have to say, I've watched quite closely the Saints West Ham fixtures over the last couple of years. I was at the Olympic Stadium, or it's not called that anymore, is it? The London Stadium. And not last season, but obviously the season before. And it was just incredible how Mikel Antonio just bullied our centre backs and how easy it was for him in that game. He ran them ragged. And wow. I have to say, he has started the season absolutely on fire. And I am a little bit concerned about my team being able to handle him. And what I want to see from the team is probably a similar to performance to what we did against Manchester United, where we didn't leave huge gaps in behind. We didn't look to press too high too soon the whole first half. And we were a little bit more conservative in the way that we played. And I think when you're playing against somebody like a Michael Antonio, who has got that ability to run through the back of you and with his pace and power, I don't want to see huge gaps behind our back four, because I think that spells trouble for us. But yeah, I think you're right. I think this game could well end in a score draw. Let's hope so.
Say, what do you think about the Man United game, lads? You think Newcastle are thinking, oh my goodness, why us this week at Old Trafford? We've obviously, poor old Steve Bruce has been getting pelters already this season, and he'll be thinking, just my luck, Ronaldo's back. What do you think of getting a number 7 shirt, guys? Tis, it's your shirt. Would you have asked for it
number
back?
Number 7 shirt. Obviously, it was a big thing for him. Cavani had it before, didn't he? And he's agreed to give it up. I mean, Edinson Cavani is not like a young lad who's just been given the number 7 shirt. I mean, that's quite a thing for him to go, yeah, no problem. You know, utmost respect to Ronaldo, and to go, you can have your shirt back, fair enough. Which was pretty cool. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Tomo. I think Steve Bruce will be shaking his head in disbelief that this day of all day, the days that Newcastle have to turn up at Old Trafford, especially given that he probably thought he had 3 points in the bag in the last outing, 2-1 up. After, in fact, you still thought they did win 2-1, Tomo, and given away a penalty in the 96th minute. So I think you're right. Bruce will be absolutely tearing his greying hair out.
Does he start, Charlie?
I think he does, Tomo, because when he scored the brace against Ireland midweek there and then came flying back, and you thought, well, we know he's fit, we know he's sharp, he's always that anyway, isn't he? I think because of the fans, his belief and the attitude when he walk into the ground, they're all expecting him to start. I think all Stevie Bruce can hope for is that there's so many egos within the Manchester United dressing room that he starts and hopes that they're not quite gelling yet, and they're quite in a different way that they, how they see things portrayed. But I think they've got to start him, Tomo. I think because of the hype and everything that goes with it, I think he's a must starter. I'd be amazed if Ronaldo doesn't start.
I know. I'm thinking that, Charlie. But they've had a decent start of Man United. Say decent start. Who does he come in for? Does he really? And I'm just, there's something in the back of my mind that he's going, put him on the bench. And then if he's needed, and he'll come on at some point anyway, but say it's not going right. You can imagine him coming on with 25 minutes to go. It is just going, that place will be absolutely bouncing. And I just think, I can just visualise him coming off there and taking that tracksuit off, just getting ready, and something's telling me that he's going to be a sub. Tis?
Yeah, I agree with you, Tomo.
Again?
You're spot on. I can't believe this. I was just thinking during that chat, I think he'll probably start on the bench. And then when you said it, I'm like, oh, Jesus, I'm going to have to...
Oh, no, you need to stop this, guys.
This is just getting too weird for me. Let's move on. Brentford against Brighton, which I think has got the makings of a decent game. These two have both had a good start to the season, Chaz. You see this one being an entertaining fixture?
I certainly do, mate. I think both teams have got both coaches want to get the ball down, pass it through people. I'm interested to see if Brentford are going to continue with the back three. Brighton tend to play that way anyway. We always tend to look at these, or not so much Brentford, because they're just new to this league, but, you know, have they got that killer pass in the last third? Are the wider players going to get the service into the strikers? And there's always that little question mark beside them that comes to this. I just think Brentford are a type of team who are going, this is the way we play. I don't really think they've got a plan B, especially at home. And I think Thomas Franks is saying, get it, pass it, move it quick. Tony up front, let's get him into the service areas. Let's supply. And we've got midfield runners. Canos is another one who nicks a few goals. I see goals in this. I could see Brentford winning this 3-2. I think it'll be a classic.
Do you know what? I'll have to agree with you, Charlie. There's something...
Oh, stop it!
There's something great about this game. It is. No, no, it is. You look at it, and we've gone through the Leicester-Man City game, and yeah, Chelsea versus Villa is a really good one. Manchester United, the romance of... But this game is proper footballers. Two teams who want to get it down. What Potter's done for Brighton is just astonishing. They'll be really hating about the Everton result. Very much hating about it. I think they want to put this right. It is hard to split them. And I'd probably just go for Brentford with this.
I actually think this has got a high-scoring draw written all over it. I could be seeing a Desmond here between these two. So I think plenty of goals and a decent game on the cards. We've got a couple of games left to talk about in the last few minutes that we've got remaining. Chelsea-Villa, very quickly. I think we'll probably all agree on what the result's going to be in this one, given how decent Chelsea have started the season. Can you see Villa getting anything, boys?
No, I can't. I seen Chelsea, two sides of Chelsea against Liverpool, where they could defend very deep. They've got really good defenders. He can change it. He can play four at the back. He can go three at the back. So he can mix it up. And I just think that they'll have too much. I think this Villa side is still searching to find themselves this season. I really do. And I just think Chelsea are going to be challenges, which obviously you don't have to say anything. But Villa sitting in mid-table, be quite happy with that. Players getting to sort of understand the way that they're playing. Danny Ings has had a good start to the season, but I just think Chelsea will be too strong for them. I really do. It's going to be a tough day. Lukaku at home again.
Yeah, I think Chelsea look really good. They have been the team that have impressed me most. And I know, obviously, Spurs are top of the table and West Ham have started really well, but I like what they've done. I like that they didn't dramatically change. I don't know, the suspicion I've got is defensively, I don't know if they've got a lot of cover, if they've got one or two injuries at the back. I think that could leave them a touch vulnerable, because we know Reece James is very good going forward, so is Alonso, but they're not always as good when they're playing in the defensive roles. So I see that being problematic for them. I just think they've got muscle, they've got speed, they've got creativity when they go forward, and I really do think they look... I think they're the real deal for a challenge in the Premier League this season. So, comfortable home win.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that, Chaz. And lastly, but not least, Tomo, we've left your second favourite team right to the end.
Have we finished this? Are we done?
A very good start for your boys in blue up there, Tomo. 7 points after three games. Do you see Burnley given Everton a tough game, or do you see this as another 3 points for the blue half of Merseyside?
Burnley will give them a tough game, without a doubt. They just love a challenge, don't they? And, you know, if you think about it, Everton's dogs of war many years ago. This is Burnley every year. They can prove it. They have improved year on year. I fear for them for this season. I don't know what it is. There's just something a little bit... I just think defensively they're vulnerable, and there I say, yeah, I do think Everton will probably win.
That'll be 1-0 then, will it?
Sorry, was it the sound went funny a bit there, Tomo? Who was that you said was going to win?
No, you said the new place in, yeah.
Oh, that's 1-0 again then.
Home win.
No, but Everton do, and as I said, against Brighton, I thought Everton did very well. It was a tough game against Brighton, and I thought they came out of it.
Yeah, they've looked good, to be fair to them. I do think they'll get tested here, though, because where Everton tend to struggle a little bit in the past, these are the type of games that they're expected to win by their own supporters, and they find it tough to really break people down. Yeah. And Calvert-Lewin has definitely, obviously, started well, 3 goals so far. Let's hope come the weekend that Everton get a penalty and we can have another little set to between him and Richarlison to see who's going to take the penalty. Let's have another penalty, Blues!
Excellent stuff. Well, I mean, the good news is for Burnley is obviously it's three games without a win right now, and Everton away is a tough fixture, but the good news for them is they do play Arsenal at home after that, so they'll be off to a decent start there. I'm just kidding, Chaz. I'm just kidding.
No, you're not.
So, a little I'll recap get you tomorrow. For the ACCA this week. I'm not. No, you're right. Wolves at 6-5, my choice. Spurs, Tomo's choice at 4-5. And Arsenal minus one against Norwich. That means they've got to win by two clear goals at 11-8. A £10 bet on that one would win you around £94. I look forward to catching up with you boys next week when we can have a little look back at the predictions that we've just made and see just how clever
Welcome
we are.
Welcome back to Real Football.
Till next time. Where's Jeff?
Where's Jeff? Well done,
Where
boys.
Where is he? Shorty.